Welcome to these meditation and philosophy podcasts. I'm Al McGee. Well, the problem with being normal, according to Colin Wilson, is that to be normal is to be in a depressed condition. In Wilson's terms, to be normal is to be dimly aware. To be normal is therefore an impoverished condition, falling woefully short of what we're capable of being. And thus, therefore, if the extent of one's awareness is a mere everyday level of awareness, you ought not to trust yourself, for as Wilson states, ordinary consciousness is a liar. You cannot therefore trust that in such a limited state that you're capable of knowing what's true or what matters. Now, of course, your ordinariness may perhaps get you by, but in such a semi-conscious state, you'll never know the heights, the depths, and joy of higher levels of consciousness. With which Bruce Charlton agrees and says, "It was 40 years ago that Colin Wilson made me recognize explicitly something I had unconsciously felt for about 5 years, which was that ordinary, everyday human consciousness is essentially worthless." He explains, "A life lived at that level is not really being lived. It is merely automatic behavior. As such, therefore, the ordinary state or state of the natural average man is a severely limited condition. To be in such a stuck state of consciousness is, according to Wilson, to be frightfully normal. And to be frightfully normal is to be frightfully clueless, as if sprayed with fairy dust." Now, perhaps the chief characteristic of the frightfully normal human being is to go around being vacuously cheerful. It's typically to try to give everybody the impression that you're someone who is always looking on the bright side of things, well, at least in public. On display is a mentality that exudes a certain kind of bogus hopefulness, which, however, upon being examined, reveals that what's really going on is something counterfeit, amounting actually to a groundless, shallow optimism without any substance or depth. So typically, this ankle-deep attitude tends blithely and ignorantly to skate along on the surface of things without taking into account any shadows or darkness. And thus, accordingly, as it has seemed to me over the years, it's the dimmest of wits who seem always to be falsely hopeful about this or that or the other. Now, if you try to pin down one of these dreamy, overly cheery types in terms of facts or evidence, they'll quickly slip away from you, well practiced as they are at slip, sliding away from understanding or relating to the multidimensionality of what actually is. And therefore, accordingly, the speech of these surface dwellers tends ever to be garbled, misty, and vague. For this cast of mind seems always somehow to miss the point of anything that matters. Well, the frightfully normal mind is somehow consistently off-center, living instead in some sort of phony land of make-believe, and appears always to be headed towards, well, who knows where, down some yellow brick road to Oz, but not towards truth. In fact, the more hopeful the pronouncements of the dimly aware, the less believable, and the more optimistic, the less real. Alas, I think there's something missing. Something vital is not there. Something essential. Something real. My sense is that something extraordinary could be there, but isn't. A heightened level of awareness could be there, but has never been developed. Well, I think that what's on display is the absence of any kind of clear relationship with the truth of things, that is, with things as they are. And so there is a characteristic evasiveness, a sort of here, there, and everywhere kind of mind, as President Obama used to demonstrate whenever he was asked a question. His 5 to 15 minute responses, for example, were always tedious, ponderous meanderings, leaving many nonplussed about what he had been talking about. Who knew? The mentality, I think, is a well-practiced elusiveness, the point of which is, I see it, to keep truth at a safe distance in order not to be affected by it. Now, the opposite of the dreamy, liberal, New Agey mentality I've been describing is the substance, the depth, and the coherence that I observed in the American journalist Whitlaw Reid, who, as an elderly gentleman, was interviewed during the World War II documentary Finest Hour. Well, in some 18 snippets from the film, Mr. Reed comes across as a man of radiant conviction, clarity, and humor, grounded in the fullness of reality. His presence is palpable and mesmerizing. Well, as a young journalist, Whitlaw Reed had traveled to England to cover the Blitz of London by the Nazis from July to October in 1940. Then, 26, Reed's task was to deliver daily reports from London as the bombs fell and London burned. As I watched Finest Hour, I kind of wondered what fiery furnace forged this stellar character, because I was being reminded of when London's former mayor, Boris Johnson, had asked what had formed the character, the soul of Sir Winston Churchill. In what smithies did they forge that razor mind and iron will? What the hammer? What the chain? In what furnace was his brain? Well, it appears that at least one of the fiery furnaces that formed Reed's character was London's zone of horror during the Battle of Britain. It was there that Reed came in contact with reality, with the full force and range of truth, and in particular, with that aspect of reality, Nazi savagery, which he described as, and I quote, the demonic force of absolute evil. His response to London's nightmare, this, by the way, graduate in sociology of all things from Yale University, was to conclude that Hitler was an evil that had to be eliminated. When, therefore, Reed returned to America, he went on the warpath against Hitler, writing articles, giving talks on the specific theme that there are worse things than war. What's worse than war, said Mr. Reed, was to do nothing against tyranny and thereby to allow the collapse of Great Britain. Reed knew that America had the resources to turn the tide against the Nazis, and so argued against the do-nothing isolationists, urging America to join the fight against this absolute evil. Now, in my estimate, both Reed and Churchill were exemplars of what it means to be human beings in full, that is, fully aware, not dimly aware, fully aware, anything but frightfully normal. Both men, as I see it, shared in common a certain kind of understanding of human nature that I long have been reflecting on. That understanding of the human condition is to be fully aware of the existence of two opposing tendencies or capacities that exist within us all. That is, there's one part of us that has the potential to be far worse than can be comfortably contemplated, which is to be capable of levels of depravity and acts of horror beyond comprehending. On the other hand, though, secondly, there is another part of us, always to be taken into account, that has to do with the potential we each possess to be greater than has been thought humanly possible. We are thus capable, according to this view of human nature, of becoming either everlasting horrors or everlasting splendors. And we are, on a daily basis, moving towards one or the other of these directions. So to be fully aware is to be fully taking into account both man's potential for wickedness and, simultaneously, his potential for sainthood. Now, when there's an emphasis upon only man's sunny prospects, which I've called a kind of shallow wishfulness, the chief characteristic of the frightfully normal mind, the effect is to muddle the mind. This was the essential insight of the British seer, the journalist Malcolm Muggeridge, who saw it firsthand, the mind-numbing effects of the liberal mind, when he wrote for The Guardian in the early 1930s. While working for The Guardian, he witnessed many muddled minds who gave abundant evidence of having been amply sprinkled with fairy dust. Muggers then felt the intense pressure to write within the confines of their particular vision of reality. Quoting, "We were required to end everything on a hopeful note because liberalism is a hopeful creed." And so, however appalling and black the situation that we described, we would always conclude with some sentence like, "It is greatly to be hoped that moderate men of all shades of opinion will draw together and that wiser counsels may yet prevail." Well, for too long, says Muggeridge, he went along with this course of self-deception in the name of their undiscerning level of hopefulness, but was then assigned to cover the news from Moscow in 1932, which changed everything for him. for with increasing dismay, he watched the extraordinary performance of the liberal intelligentsia, who in those days flocked to Moscow like pilgrims to Mecca. And they were, says Muggeridge, one and all, utterly delighted and excited by what they saw there. Clergymen walked serenely and happily through the anti-God museums. Politicians claimed that no system of society could possibly be more equitable and just. Lawyers admired Soviet justice, and economists praised the Soviet economy. Well, these dazed, frightfully normal human beings, including the playwright George Bernard Shaw, were all too willing to believe every lie presented to them by their hero, Joseph Stalin, affectionately called Uncle Joe. How could this be? Asked Muggeridge. How could this extraordinary credulity exist in the minds of people who were adulated by one and all as maestros of discernment and judgment? Well, Muggeridge's explanation was that the refusal of so many to see truth was because of their predisposition never to see darkness and evil, especially if it conflicted with their utopian fantasies. Well, the point, therefore, of what I'm saying is that if you or I are living the normal life, which I remind you, Colin Wilson called the frightfully normal life, it means that we are succeeding at resigning ourselves to commonplace aspirations, which over time will inevitably result in a dim-eyed and undiscerning existence. Like Whitlaw Reid and Winston Churchill, Muggeridge came to the conviction that the clearest seeing and understanding never comes from the liberal dream in any of its manifestations. And so the question here to ask is, who sees? Who understands? Muggeridge answers that the clearest understanding comes from those who have escaped from the frightfully normal condition, like, as he gives for an example, the prisoners of Stalin's prison camps, the gulags, whose characters were forged by that horrific fiery furnace. The clearest and fullest understanding comes from those prisoners like an Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who had lost his freedom, who had lost everything, and who saw the ferocity of evil close up. In the midst of incomprehensible suffering, these men rose up to attain spiritual vision. And after being released, these illumined men directed the attention of the world to spiritual reality. Well, Muggeridge compares these survivors of Stalin's prison camps as like the green shoots of grass that come up through cement. Men like this broke out of their states of enslavement to affirm greater, higher, and deeper levels of spiritual reality. They ceased in any way to be frightfully normal as if sprayed with fairy dust, but became instead blessedly uncommon, and therefore worth listening to in our own search for truth and understanding.